Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And as always during the hour, along with your call, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes, new research that shows that fat people live longer.
Okay.
Whether or not that's true
to,
or not.
That seems to go against what we've been talking about for the last couple, three decades or whatever it's been.
I tend to think so.
What else?
At least that's what's in the headlines.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about New Year's resolutions, the ones you can keep, and the failure rate, and how to make that New Year's resolution improve your life.
Okay, and what's our recipe?
Roasted garlic and cauliflower soup, perfect for this time of year. Delicious. I promise you, even you, Tom, will like this.
What do you mean, even me?
Even you.
I like a lot of things. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. To the phones we go, Zorba. A listener with us now in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I am 23 years old, and I'm a vegetarian. And I just feel, like, really super lethargic all the time. Doesn't matter if I get, like, 8 hours of sleep, 12 hours of sleep. I'm just always tired. And I've talked to several doctors about it, and they keep telling me that I need to start eating meat again because I'm a vegetarian, and I just will not accept that as truth.
Oh, well, I was just going to say you need to eat more some meat. That was... I'm not a doctor, but...
You're not a doctor, but you are a carnivore. And if anyone is tired, it must be that they're not eating enough meat, Tom, right?
Right.
In fact, the whole world would be better if they ate more meat, isn't it? Isn't that your belief?
Except for maybe the cows.
Except for the cows, the horses, the environment, all of the issues. Well, first of all, the doctors are wrong. You don't have to eat more meat in order to be able to get more, you know, more energy into your body. There are a couple of things that are of question. First of all, are you anemic? Did they do any blood work?
No, they didn't.
Okay. So that's kind of question number one. And the reason is iron deficiency anemia, which can be associated with fatigue, is the most common form of anemia worldwide. And if that's the case, you can easily supplement it by eating vegetarian foods that contain iron, such as spinach. That's why Popeye did so well, because spinach is high in iron. And the way to find a list of those vegetarian foods, those vegetables that are iron, the best way is you Google iron and you find out what it is. And we'll put that a list of that on our website, zorbapastor.org.
Now, what if there's no iron deficiency?
Well, if there's no iron deficiency, then you're tired for other reasons. But it's not due to the fact that you're not eating enough meat. I mean, those are—
Not diet-connected at all, you're saying?
Well, you know, there can be a lot
there
of reasons for
fatigue. There isn't a vegetarian diet that you can have that—
No. But there's no on the whole, people who complain about fatigue do not have a diet-related problem. I mean, that's usually not the issue. So, a few questions. Do you work? Where do you work?
I work for an insurance company.
Insurance company. What time, how much sleep do you get at night?
I get between 8 and 12 hours of sleep.
12 hours is a lot of sleep.
I really enjoy sleeping.
I'm on that end. I happen to enjoy sleeping, too. I love sleeping until 9:30 or 10. Tom is an early riser, so he finds that funny, right?
I can't understand joy in sleeping because you're asleep. How do you know whether you like it or not?
He has a good point there. Granted, you are indeed correct. Do you like your job?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, because one question that always comes up with fatigue is it due to depression or stress? So is your fatigue due to depression or stress? You know, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's winter here in Green Bay, and that's kind of depressing. So it's possible.
Okay, so it's possible. So for seasonal affective disorder, which is a lack of energy in the winter, I get it myself. There is a seasonal affective disorder light, and the way to find them, they're now about $60, much, much cheaper than they used to be. They're called SAD lights. If you go to Amazon.com and you type in SAD, like sad, seasonal affective disorder, SAD light, it'll pop out. And what What I recommend are the LED lights, and they are about $60. They plug in the wall. They're portable. They're dynamite. Use them for 20 to 40 minutes a day. It's not as if you have to sit there and stare into the light. I do it when I check my email in the morning. The light is to the right of me. I'm looking at my email, drinking my cup of coffee. It gives me tremendous energy. Made a huge difference in my life. I don't have depression, but I do have seasonal affective disorder, and that made a big difference. Number two. If you wonder if your fatigue is from depression, the SAD light may work, but antidepressants often can be very, very effective. And I have some people who are on it, they take it the middle of September or the beginning of October, and they stop around February, March when the days get longer. So the other possibility is to look at a drug such as Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Celexa, a very well-tolerated antidepressants, and seeing whether or not that would be worthwhile for you too. That's what I would suggest. But you don't have to go back to become a meat eater. You can stay a vegetarian if you want to.
Oh, well, that's a relief. Thank you so much.
Sure. We appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 1-800-462-7413. And before we take our next call, Zorba, there is apparently research that suggests that overweight people, even obese people, live longer than the rest of us.
Well, it's a very interesting article. First of all, the researcher came out with provocative research back in 2005 that showed that very thin people seem to die sooner.
I remember that.
Yeah, remember that research?
Yes,
and one of the issues we discussed is she included a whole bunch of people that should not have been included in that study. I don't want to talk about that study, but study had lots and lots of black marks against it.
Yeah.
This particular study, one Harvard researcher called rubbish. He said, I think this study is rubbish. Let me tell you
what. Isn't this from JAMA?
Well, it's from JAMA. It's well published. It's a good study. In many ways, it's controversial, but I may agree with this person. Let me tell you about the study. First of all, it's a study of studies. So she did not do the study. She looked at a bunch of other studies. 1 million people worldwide, many, many different studies looking at BMIs between 25 and 30 and BMIs above 30. Now,
body mass index.
Body mass index, height overweight. Little formula, height overweight.
Yeah.
You know, are you too short for your weight? And we know that over 30, we call that obesity. Some people call that morbid obesity. The people over 30 still have a higher risk of death, okay? So for the very obese people, she still found that. The question is between the people of 25 and 30, the people that we would call maybe stage one obesity or mild obesity. And what she found was that they actually lived longer than the people who had a BMI less than 25, the normal weight people.
Well, so explain that.
Well, there are a few explanations for the study. She, number one, did not control for smoking. We know that people who smoke cigarettes are thinner, and people who smoke cigarettes often don't live as long because they are smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
She did not control for chronic disease, cystic fibrosis, kidney disease. They tend to be associated with an inability to put on weight. Now, diabetics, we know, are heavier, but people with other chronic diseases such as HIV/AIDS have trouble putting on weight.
Yeah.
She did not control for that. And then here's the final issue. Who made up this number of 25 as obese and 30 is morbid obesity? It's an arbitrary number.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the number 25 is wrong. Maybe the number should be 27. So the final thing in this is that she never controlled for people who are really, really muscular and people who are, quote, fat and overweight. So if we look at people, I just went to the gym this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the gym at the University of Wisconsin. There are a lot of 25-year-olds who are and 20-year-olds who are very, very muscular. But on the scale, they might have an elevated BMI. Believe me, they're healthy. Maybe they've got 3% body fat. So I've got a recommendation. I've got a test that I call the Snow White test.
Okay.
In other words, if your BMI is elevated between 21 and 30, I have a recommendation. Go into your house and take off all of your clothes and look into the mirror. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?
Got it.
If you see love handles, hey, you're overweight. If you see strong, rock-hard muscle, you're just fine.
What if you don't see any of that?
Just the then you're blind. Then you're blind or you're not looking.
800-462-7413. It's toll-free. 800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to a listener in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Thank you for your program, and Zorba to your laugh. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. How can we help you?
And my son is 9 years old, and he is complaining of pain in his both ankles. He is 5 feet and 80 pounds. My concern is his both feet are going inward when he walks. He doesn't realize it when I tell him, you know, are you in pain? He said, no. So it's even when he is not in pain, his walking is now differently.
Okay, so he's 9 years old. When did this happen?
This happened, I would say, several weeks ago, probably 6-7 weeks ago, going on and off.
Any injury that you know of? You know, 9-year-olds can fall and hurt themselves and we never hear about it.
No, I am pretty certain. I'm with him, you know, even when he plays sports, I'm with him. There is no specific injury. The pain is in the back of his both ankles, in the tendon.
In the tendon. Has he grown a lot this year or not?
Yes, I would say yes. He is in his whole grade. He is the tallest
one. So he is the tallest one in all of his grade. And sports, you said, what sports does he engage in?
He plays basketball. Mm-hmm. He plays soccer.
He likes it. He's good at it.
He's very good at both, yeah.
He's very good. And has it stopped? Has he stopped playing basketball or soccer?
No, he did not.
Okay. So in other words, he complains about pain to you, but he still is able to play basketball and soccer quite well.
Right.
Okay. Shoes? Changing shoes recently?
No, actually, I did not.
Okay. I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, I think any 9-year-old who continues to complain about pain ought to be seen at some point. In other words, sounds to me like these may be what we call growing pains. Now, growing pains often occur around the knees, but they can also occur around the ankle. My gut feeling, with 95% surety, is that this is simply due to the rapid growth that he's had. He's 5 feet tall. He's the tallest in his grade, and he's an athlete. And the reason that that's my gut feeling is that he's still engaging in sports. If you said, hey, he's walking around, he's walking funny, it doesn't look the way that he normally walks, and he stopped playing basketball and soccer, that would be a different issue. And do they like sports in Oklahoma?
What kind of question is that?
We're very serious.
They used to have a good football team.
We do. We're very proud of our Thunder. Let's put it this way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
For
we
your
appreciate
call.
The call.
Thank you so much.
800-462-7413.
Do they like sports in Oklahoma is the same as saying, is it cold in Green Bay in the winter?
800-462-7413. And now to Burlington, Wisconsin we go. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Frank.
Yeah, how can we help?
I have more of a, I'm looking for more of a second opinion, doctor. I'm 40 years old, and I started running about 7 years ago. It was about New Year's Eve, or New Year's morning, and I stepped on the scale, and it read 193.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 5'9", mm-hmm. so I was about, 33, 34 at the time, mm-hmm. and so I started to run.
Okay.
And over the past 7 years, in that first year alone, I took off 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, yeah.
That's a lot of weight to take off.
Well, thank you. And it was all based on being very aware of my diet and my exercise. And since then, I've maintained that. But the reason I called was because I continually get a lot of ribbing from my family that, that I'm a little bit too swell, that I'm a lot bit too skinny. The ribbing is easy because you can see them on the side of my chest now. So I guess I've looked at everything. As a runner, I've 5 marathons under my belt and countless 5Ks. I do all the reading I possibly can, Runner's World and all of those other periodicals. I feel like I'm doing everything right. My BMI is 21, 20.8, 21. My body fat is between 11 and 14 on the high end. I think I run about 32, 33 miles a week is my average.
So I
think too much is my wife's concern, and that I don't have enough to grab onto for hugs and such is another concern.
I don't have enough to grab onto for hugs. That's kind of, you know, I don't have those love handles. Well, first of all, you obviously made a major change in your lifestyle. It's not just running. You're eating differently. I mean, it's not because you can run all you want to. And if you eat the same, you won't lose that much weight, as much weight as you used to. There are a couple things. First of all, a BMI between, you know, 20 and 25 is just fine. That's sort of what we think of as the sweet spot if we're only going to use BMI. But it's really also lean body mass. And clearly, you've got a lot of lean body mass based on your age and everything. That's a lot. That is a good lean body mass that you have in terms of the fat content of your body. You know, people who saw you heavier have a body image of what you look like when you were heavier. And so for them, they think of you as thin. New people who you meet who have never seen you before will think of you as the weight that you happen to be at. And it's very, very interesting because people tend to hold on to that image of other people and they'll say, God, you lost so much weight. Are you really healthy? And maybe you have cancer or heart disease or AIDS or you're just, you know, anorexic and do you have bulimia? And they get into all sorts of funky things when people who are overweight go back to a normal weight. Your weight is normal. Now, the other question is the wife who says, honey, you don't have the love handles. Does your wife have a weight problem? Is she overweight or what's her weight?
Well, I would say she's perfect.
Of course. You should. You know something?
So is your wife.
That's right.
So is my wife.
My wife is perfect. Tom's wife is perfect. We all have perfect wives. But what would I say?
I think that you'd probably say that, you know, there's concern to lose a little bit of weight.
So that might be the other issue. These are not uncommon issues, by the way, within families. Mm-hmm. You know, where one person loses weight and the other one wants to lose weight but doesn't lose weight. I lost about 10 pounds a few years ago. I just went to Nepal fairly recently. I lost some more weight. I eat as much as I want to. And my wife looks at me and goes, you're too thin. I want you to put on weight. And I think I am about 5 pounds less than I was a year ago, but it feels good to me. And so the answer is, well, thank you, honey. And then I just go on doing what I'm doing. So I think your weight is okay. Physiologically, your weight is fine. But from a family situation, I never enter into those discussions.
Smart.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep. 800-462-7413.
Notice he called me smart.
Yeah.
When I said family situation.
Doesn't everybody? Aren't you? I think I've gone, by the way, from skinny most of my life to frail.
To frail with nothing in between, healthy in between, from skinny to frail.
Before we take a short break, Zorba, I'm bringing you a little message from a member of the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police, or should I say taking. Well, we'll find out. Charlie from Fernandina Beach, Florida, wants to clear things up. He writes, on a recent episode, you told a listener to bring it to the doctor. The grammatically correct way would have been to say take it to your doctor or don't bring it back. Bring is used for movement toward the speaker, and take is used for movement away. It's a mistake that's gathering bizarre speed almost as quickly as beginning a sentence with so.
I always begin sentences with so.
Regards, Charlie.
So what do you think, Tom?
I think he's right.
No, I said so. So what do you think I'm beginning
I always say so. Yeah. But what about the bring take thing?
So you bring something to, you take something away?
No, the opposite. You take something to the doctor.
Yeah.
Here's a piece of paper. Yeah. Take it to the doctor. Uh-huh. You don't say, here's a piece of paper. Bring it to the doctor? You shouldn't, I guess.
You know something? I have to tell you something. In the Chicago public schools,
we were
taught, to, you know, this is Chicago speech. Yeah. You know, I mean, how can I possibly? Possibly, you know, I mean, maybe Florida, they speak a little bit differently.
It's a little confusing to me. I began email by saying, this is my words, not the
policeman.
Fernandina Beach, Florida.
Policeman.
I said, I'm bringing you a little message. I don't think I would say I'm taking you a little message.
I'm taking you. No, you wouldn't say I'm taking you a little
and
message. But here's what I want to know. What's the takeaway message from this? What do we want to bring to our listeners as the takeaway message?
There you go.
From this particular
now you got
discussion?
It.
I used it in a sentence.
I guess.
I won. I got it. Thank you.
If you've taken issue with Zorba's grammar, bring us your complaints by sending them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
So, our recipe is coming up. After that, more of your calls, along with some interesting research and our medical mythbuster, all right here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. You can call us now if you'd like. We have a line open. Callers are waiting. But before we get to the next caller, it is recipe time. And this week, Zorba, we have a special listener challenge. Paul in Farmersburg, Iowa, recently sent us a letter in which he asked us to freshen up our recipe repertoire. I'll let Paul take it from here. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, I listen to your show every week on my rural mail route. The recipes are great, and I've tried more than one. However, I have a bone to pick. More often than not, the recipes call for canned goods. As a fresh vegetable producer, I encourage you to promote the use of fresh and local produce. Your recipes also often call for one or more cloves of garlic, but how big is a clove? Garlic is my specialty crop, so I've sent along a few bulbs. One clove of this variety, called porcelain, is much larger and more flavorful than the cheap and inexpensive, to parrot Zorba, imported garlic that we often find in stores. So, Zorba, have you come up with a recipe for all of this garlic? Your patients may have to avoid you for a day or two."
I love garlic. I mean, I can't imagine a society that does not have garlic in it. It's absolutely wonderful. And by the way, during the farmer's market in the summer, I have a local garlic purveyor at the Madison Farmer's Market that I often get garlic from, and it really, really makes a big difference.
And you've brought along a garlic recipe.
That's right. So we've got a garlic recipe today, which is roasted garlic and cauliflower soup. Doesn't that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Sound good?
And we'll notice in front of us here our new improved producer, Gabrielle Pedriani, has actually cooked us
some roast. So after the end of this, we get to actually taste it, which is wonderful.
Okay.
And of course, you know, our listeners will taste it vicariously over the air with us.
Which is not quite as good.
Not quite as good to do the virtual tasting versus the regular tasting. So we start out with two heads of cauliflower.
Mm-hmm. Two heads of cauliflower.
Cooking spray. Now, what cooking spray do you use?
You know, one of those.
One of those cooking sprays. I tend to use the olive oil cooking spray. I like it. 15 cloves of garlic, which basically is a large head of regular store garlic. Wait, you're starting to, you're getting ready to eat the soup. We haven't even done the recipe yet.
I don't, all I have to say is one tea, two teas.
That's exactly
big
it.
Teas. I can eat but while you do the rest of it.
So basically, it's a large head of regular store-bought garlic or three heads of porcelain hardneck. How does it taste? You just add a taste.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, you have to wait.
I have to wait. That's right, because otherwise I'll spit it up. 5 cups of low-sodium veggie broth.
5 cups of low-sodium veggie stock.
A cup of yellow onion.
Cup of yellow onion.
Chopped, nice and chopped. Mm-hmm. Half a tablespoonful of fresh thyme, finely chopped.
Half a big tea, fresh thyme, finely chopped.
2 tablespoonfuls of fresh lemon juice.
2 big tea fresh lemon juice.
1 cup of green veggies, peas, broccoli, chopped greens. Just pick a nice green vegetable to put in there.
That's 1 cup of them.
That's right, 1 cup of them. Nice, you know, chopped, nice and chopped up. Fresh parsley sprigs for garnish.
Yeah, I like parsley. Yeah.
Salt and pepper to taste. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, some finely grated Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, can I just say, doesn't the vegetable stock come in a can?
Yes, actually, it does come in a can. That's very good. Excellent.
There's no way you can. Is there a way to have vegetable stock not coming in a can?
Of course, yeah. You make it yourself, of course. Well, your wife, Monica, makes veggie stock all the time, doesn't she?
Well, we trade off.
Yes, you trade off, exactly. So let's make it. Preheat the oven at 350 degrees. Wash the cauliflower and cut into small florets. Now, place it on a cookie sheet lined with aluminum foil and spray it lightly with cooking spray. This allows you to roast something and not add calories to it. Mm-hmm. That really is a big issue. Then cut off the top of the garlic bulb, spray it with cooking spray, paste the garlic onto the cookie sheet with the cauliflower, put in the oven to roast until the cauliflower and garlic are soft. That's about 1 hour. Mm-hmm. 1 hour. So you can you can go and listen to the show, the rest of the show while you're doing it, and you'll be just fine. Remove it. Just put the timer on to be sure. Remove it from the oven. Open up the garlic package to let it cool. You know, open up that wonderful garlic bulb. Then, in a soup pot, pour in enough veggie broth to cover the bottom of the pot, just a little bit. Then, over medium heat, bring the broth to a bubble and add the onion and thyme and sauté it. So you're sautéing it in soup broth, veggie broth, versus in oil. Mm-hmm. Stirring frequently until the onion is translucent. Then add a bit more broth. Turn it down if necessary to prevent the burning. So you can add a little bit of broth at a time. Then add the roasted cauliflower, the rest of the broth, the lemon juice, the thyme. Pick up the garlic and aluminum foil still wrapped around the base and squeeze the roasted garlic into the pot. Mm-hmm. So you're going to squeeze all that roasted garlic out. It is delicious. Absolutely delicious. Increase the heat. Bring it to a boil. And then simmer for about 5 minutes. Remove from the heat. Puree the soup in a food processor or a blender. For Christmas, I got a wonderful blender that is an immersion blender, so I don't have to take it out and put it in the blender. You immerse the blender. It's got a rotating blade.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You are trying to picture this, and I see a deer in the headlights look like, what in the blazes are you talking about? It's called an immersion blender.
All right.
An immersion blender. We will put a copy of the immersion blender on our website, zorbapastor.org. So if anyone like Tom Clark and others do not know what's on there, what an immersion blender looks like, I will definitely put it on there. So
I'll take a look at that, and then I'm sure I'll go out and buy one.
Add you puree the soup. Add the green vegetables. Similar sound. You know, I'm holding my breath. Yeah. I'm holding my breath. Yeah. For 5 to 10 minutes. You can't make me laugh. I can't finish the recipe. 5 to 10 more minutes. If you're using spinach, by the way, be careful because you just do it for about a minute. Add black pepper, cayenne pepper, put it in the bowl, sprinkle with parsley, Parmesan, serve immediately, and now I'm going to get a chance to enjoy this soup. Yeah. Mm. This is delicious. Oh, Here, I'm going to give some to our listeners. You ready? Yeah. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah, right, good. Well, I've got to say, it tastes okay to me.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite garlicky enough for me.
It's total garlic. It has a roasted garlic taste. It is delicious.
It could use a little beef or chicken.
Beef or chicken. It's a veggie soup.
Maybe it sort of tastes like maybe lamb pieces.
It is not. No, it's a veggie soup. In fact, it's a vegan soup. That's what the whole thing. It's a vegan veggie soup.
Oh, I got that.
You know, get on the bandwagon.
I got that.
It's a vegan, veggie, gluten-free, macrobiotic soup. Does that excite you?
Uh-huh. To get a copy of today's recipe and to see some behind-the-scenes pictures of how it's made, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're at it, you can search all your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
+1 800 462 7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Great program.
Oh, thank you. How can we help?
My my problem. It's not my problem. It's my son's problem. He's 23 years old. He's in his last year of college, and he doesn't perspire. He sweats. He was in a wedding this summer in an air-conditioned church up at front, and it's just dripping off of him, and it's really stress-related, I think, more than anything. He's got interviews coming up after this semester, and I just see him in these interviews just dripping sweat. So I'm wondering if there's anything that can help him.
Sure, there are things. What's your son, what's his degree going to be in?
Engineering.
Mm-hmm. Engineering. So he's going to be looking around for engineering jobs. And when we sweat in the middle of an interview, the appearance is that we're nervous.
Right.
The fact is, we're all nervous in an interview.
Yeah.
But the people
who
sweat.
But you don't want to show it, obviously.
Well, for some odd reason within our society, even though the person who's interviewing you knows you're nervous, you want that person to look cool and collected.
Yeah.
And I it's very interesting because I'm not exactly sure why, but you don't want the person to look nervous because it's not.
Has nothing to do with the job.
Job at all.
Yeah.
And who is not going to be nervous, you know, sitting down for an interview on a job that you want? Everyone is going to be nervous. Beta blockers. That's what I would recommend he try. Propranolol, P-R-O-P-R-A-N-O-L-O-L, propranolol. That's what I would try. Under the name brand Interol, I would use the generic, of course. And 10 to 20 milligrams once or twice a day or three times a day will knock down his sweating a lot. I would try it before the interview. But propranolol can make a huge difference. It decreases the pulse, so the pulse does not go up nearly as high. It works very, very well for stage fright. And for many people, it works for nervous sweating. It can make a big difference.
Okay, and that's a prescription?
Mm-hmm. It is a prescription. It is not a tranquilizer. Many people in symphony orchestras take it because it stops the tremor that can be associated with playing strings. Violinists, violists, cellists, they all take propranolol. It's a very common drug that's used. For many people, it cuts down on sweating in a very significant way. Now, that sometimes combined with an H2 blocker such as Zantac, 150 milligrams twice daily over the counter can make a difference. And if that doesn't work, combine it with an antihistamine such as generic Claritin, 20 milligrams a day, two tablets a day can make a difference. And what I would do is he shouldn't feel any of these. They shouldn't be abnormal. But I would try that out in a situation where he thinks he's going to sweat. Now, it's not as if you can play act with your son and say, okay, I'm interviewing you,
no,
sweat.
It's not the same.
It doesn't work. But there may be other situations where he sweats where he can try this out and see if this works.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck for your son. You're proud of him, huh?
I am. He's a great kid.
Great kid. That's good. So all he has to do is look cool, calm, and collected.
Right.
Like we expect an engineer to be when he's applying for the job, his dream job, and maybe he'll get it.
Yeah.
We'll help. Oh, thank you, doctor.
Let us know what happens.
Okay, will do. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Did you used to take those things when you were starting your speaking career, those drugs?
No, I never took them.
You never
when
did?
When I started my speaking career. But I sweated. But I didn't take them because I was afraid it would interfere with the stress that I had. But I was tempted to take them. But it wasn't my speaking career. I didn't mind that. It was when I was on television. Because 30 seconds into television, all of a sudden I would have a sweat response, and my sweat response would occur. And that on TV, then you look nervous.
That's funny. I don't notice that here on the radio, Zorba. And before we take a short break, it's time now to prepare yourself for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. On a recent episode, you said that GMOs, or genetically modified organisms, were nothing to worry about. But your advice has certainly worried a lot of listeners. Frank, an organic farmer in Arkansas, is especially concerned about his corn. He writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, I was disappointed to hear you say that genetically modified food products are safe. I depend on bees for pollination, and even though my corn is not genetically modified, the same bees that pollinate the GMO corn nearby also pollinate mine. The problem is that this corn is injected with an insecticide called the BT toxin, which kills bees along with the pests. You should read up on the situation to learn how truly dangerous GMOs really are."
Well, I think our listener has a very good point. And the issue about GMOs, and I think I probably either misspoke or exaggerated what the issues are. There's certain genetically modified species that we have that are hybridized. In other words, they're not put in a biochemical or by anything that's fancy. If we look at hybrid tea roses, for instance, they're genetically modified, but they're through hybridization. And if we look at the present corn crop, even the organic corn crop, the way we got to these large ears of corn is through hybridization, which is a genetic modification through a natural route. Mm-hmm. And so what I was really doing, and I should have really differentiated, was between genetic modification that's done through hybridization and genetic modification that is basically done through chemistry, we'll say through Monsanto. Mm-hmm. And there really are differences there that places like the European Union had then said, we don't want to have genetically modified vegetables within our food supply, especially if it's not identified in that way. So I think he brings up a good point. I do stand corrected. I think there's a difference between hybridization done through the natural route and hybridization that's done through the artificial route.
Interesting.
And the artificial route, I don't think we know enough about. And the natural route is simply following Mother Nature, and that's, among other things, why we're getting so much corn today out of our crops. I think it's something like 5 or 10 times more bushels today per acre of land. And a lot of that is through hybridization through the natural route.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think Zorba's advice needs some modification, send your disagreements along to the show in an email too.
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have an interesting topic to talk about. We have more of your calls and, of course, our medical myth buster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, we talk a little belatedly about New Year's resolutions.
Well, they're not belated if you're still doing them, right?
Yeah, but you want this great information before
that's
you start
right,
making
it. Now, do you make up your New Year's resolutions?
I never do it. No.
How about in the past? Have you ever done that?
I don't think I've ever done
How
it.
How about Monica? Does she do
I
it?
I know. Neither one of
no,
us
No, I don't think Penny does.
What
do you know
you?
Anyone who does? No, I don't do them. No. I don't do New Year's resolutions.
Well, then let's move right along.
We'll just forget the whole thing going to the next
caller. Our next caller.
No. We're going to talk about New Year's resolutions.
All right, resolutions. Good.
So I've got a list of the top 10 resolutions for 2012, and then I'll give you my suggestion. What do you think the number one is?
Lose weight.
Of course. Number one. Yeah. Now, diets, if a diet starts on Monday.
Stop smoking has got to be up there.
It is. It's up there. But it's number 7. It shows you how many. Well, it shows you how many people have already quit smoking.
How many people have totally given up.
Or given up trying to quit. Okay, what else? What else do you think is up there?
Oh, gee, I don't know.
Guess. Guess what number 2 is. You'll never guess.
I don't know.
Get organized.
Get organized.
That's number 2, get organized. I thought I suffer from too much organization. I would have never thought.
Well,
that's
difficult to know whether you're keeping the resolution or not because that's sort of
if
an
you're
incremental
not organized,
thing. Yeah.
How about number 3? What do you think number 3
is? Don't ask. I don't know.
Spend less, save more.
Okay.
Well, that's pretty good. Number 4?
Is be nice to your spouse on there? Anyway?
Well, living, enjoy. No, it's not on there. It's not the top 10. Spend more time with the family is out there, but not being nice to the family.
You just spend the time.
You get the New Year's resolution. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be nice to the family. Number 4 is enjoy life to the fullest. Notice we haven't talked about fitness yet.
No, we haven't.
We're talking about weight loss.
Enjoy life to the fullest. That's another one. That's an easy one to make, and you can say I kept it
whether you did it or not. What do you mean?
I know.
Staying fit and healthy. That's number 5.
Well, there you go.
Down the list. Losing weight is number 1. Fit and healthy is number 5. Fit and healthy ought to be number 2. Said number 2 is get organized. See, that's number 2. Learn something exciting is number 6.
Learn something exciting.
Now, do you think we live in a boring society?
Well, kind of.
I guess so. Learn something exciting. Turn off the TV. Quit smoking. Help others in their dreams.
What does that
mean? I don't know what that means.
That's not
help. Mean. That's number.
Hey, helping
that's
others.
Number eight.
Helping
others is probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guess what number nine is?
How would I know?
Fall in love.
Oh,
isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Should be number nine. I think for some people, that's probably number one. Yeah. So if I were to put this all together, I would say lose weight, stay fit, get organized, fall in love, and help others. Got it.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Back to the phones, Zorba and a listener in Edna, Kansas. Hi.
Hi, Zorba.
How can we help?
Well, approximately a year ago, I started taking medicine, paroxetine, for anxiety attacks. And about 6 months ago, I started noticing I have a tremor in my left hand. I'm just asking if this was a byproduct of that medicine, and if so, maybe do you think my health care provider should maybe put me on a different kind of medicine?
Uh-huh. So, first of all, how did the paroxetine work, which is generic Paxil? How did it work for your anxiety?
It has helped immensely.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. What sort of situations made you anxious?
Being in a large group of people.
Uh-huh. So it helped with social anxiety.
Yeah,
what do you do for a living, sir?
I work at a major agricultural firm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're around people all the time?
Exactly.
So this is very helpful. If you have and the tremor that you said you had was on one side of your body, not on the other side, just in one hand?
Yes.
Chances that these are from the paroxetine are pretty slim. Pretty
okay.
slim. Yeah. Usually, if there's going to be any kind of a side effect from the drug in your body, it's usually bilateral. So for the most part, you know, what you want to do is get an evaluation. Tremor can be very difficult to figure out. But let me ask you a couple of questions. Do you drink coffee?
Yes.
Okay. When you pick up a cup of coffee, does your tremor get better or does it get worse?
Worse.
It gets worse. So it's a tremor with intention. We call it intention. How about food? When you're picking up food, you want to bring it to your mouth. What happens to your tremor?
I don't think it has any effect. I think it probably goes away.
Okay. So you haven't noticed anything with food. And what about when you're in situations with other people where you were anxious? You're on the Paxil right now, generic Paxil. Do you have much of a tremor there in your voice, a trill in your voice?
People have noticed that, yes.
Uh-huh. People have noticed. Okay. So one thing, if you have an intention tremor, which is not Parkinson's and often a beta blocker, it can be very, very useful for that. Beta blockers can be useful for that. Diazepam, which is Valium in very small amounts, a milligram once or twice or three times a day can be useful for that too.
Okay.
So I think I'd get an evaluation for this because the drugs that you would use would be prescription drugs anyway, but I don't think it's from the generic Paxil, and I would stay right on it.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you so much for your call, and thanks for bringing this up. This is a really important point for people who have social anxiety.
Yeah. I want to
that
thank,
you can all of a sudden
well,
function.
Thank you very much for calling. If you have an anxiety problem, I would think it'd be kind of tough to call a talk show.
Yeah.
It took a lot of courage.
I
bet
believe
it did.
That. I can
bet
believe
it did.
That. Thanks.
It
we appreciate thank it. You. I would never do this.
Yeah.
I would never call a radio program.
Yeah. No, I understand. I understand. Yeah, I understand because I, too, don't like to call radio programs.
Yeah.
I do occasionally cause a radio program.
Well,
but
you
it makes
do.
Me,
what,
you
the
bet?
Political ones?
Yes,
you?
And it makes me anxious. I'm sitting on the air, and I think, how can I be anxious? I'm on the radio. Doesn't make any difference at all. They pick up, and they go, okay, Zorba's on the air. Yes, Zorba, what's your question? I go, duh. And I feel totally anxious like everybody else.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. And time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth comes to us from a listener named Angie, who's a bit bent out of shape about an earlobe issue. She writes, "Hi, Dr. Z. I recently heard some news that if you have a crease in your earlobe, it signals heart problems. I am 56 years old, and I've had a crease in my lower left ear for years. I don't smoke, eat well, and exercise daily. Do I have to worry?
Well, by the way, that whole concept of earlobe creases goes way back to 1989 when there was an article in the New England Journal of Medicine that said that earlobe creases were associated with heart disease. So first of all, let's talk about what's really associated with heart disease: high blood pressure and high cholesterol, obesity, lack of exercise. So if you look at somebody and they're very, very much overweight and short of breath and don't exercise, they probably have heart disease. But the earlobe crease, well, it's really open to debate. As you get older, your earlobes become more creased. So, you know, it's really an age issue. As you have more wrinkles in your earlobe, as you have more wrinkles in your skin, as you have more gray hair, as you tend to lose more hair, these are all things that are associated with older age. And we know that older age is indeed, you know, associated with heart disease. That's the fact.
So when you get older, you're more likely to die, is that?
That's exactly. Exactly. That's
but why the earlobe?
But here's the big but. There are people who have creases in the earlobes that are inherited, and they are not associated with heart disease. But there are some earlobe creases that are associated with a collapse of blood vessels in the earlobe, and they are indicative of heart disease.
But if I have these and I'm worried, could I go to see you in your office and could you tell me whether that's a bad crease or a good crease?
Yes, I can. If you, Tom, come to my office, I can look at your earlobes and tell if it's a bad crease or a good crease. But you know what I would use to finally make my decision besides my eyeballs to look at them? A cholesterol test.
Got it.
That is the reliable answer to the earlobes. It is a sign that may mean something, but for the most part, I think it's hogwash.
Got it. 800-462-7413, toll free. Jacksonville, Florida now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
So ever since I can remember, eating certain rich food items, and when I say rich, usually involves chocolate. I can remember most frequently it would happen with candy bars, really rich cheesecake, or some type of cake. When I'm eating the food item, before I usually even get the second bite down, I get cross-eyed. My equilibrium goes off to where my eyes actually start closing and go up into my head, like I'm getting really dizzy. A lot of times I'll have to put my hand on something to kind of balance myself. You know, I stop eating it after that, but it's hard to tell what items this will happen with. So it's happened with a few different ones over the years, and of course I've stopped eating those since. But I can never really tell which new item it will happen with.
Wow. Has this been a problem all your life?
Since I was probably for about 10 years, since I was,
Is it anything? Is it all sugar related, do you think?
It is. Mm-hmm.
So you'll have one or two pieces of chocolate, and all of a sudden you become dizzy, blurry eyed. Do you collapse? Do you faint?
No, I have not. However, it feels like that would happen if I didn't stop eating it.
Okay. And so do you stop eating it?
I do, usually the second bite.
After the second bite. How many foods do this to you? Lots of foods or just a few?
No, just a few. They're usually very rich dessert items. Mm-hmm. You know, like cheesecakes. I remember very well Snickers bars. Very rich candy bars would do it. They were usually very dominant with chocolate.
Mm-hmm. A couple of other things. Do you sweat with this at all when this happens?
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's some sort of a food intolerance. I'm racking my brain thinking in my mind what this could be. If it were only chocolate, in chocolate it has something called xanthines, X-A-N-T-H-I-N-E-S. And some people are hypersensitive to xanthines.
But
chocolate,
this is non-chocolate
cocoa,
things too.
Coffee, right. And those are xanthines. So I could relate it to xanthines if those were the only things that did it. But it sounds like you've got some sort of a food intolerance. We know people can get this with shellfish, not just an allergic reaction, but a reaction to the iodine and sometimes the reaction of the toxins that are in shellfish. But you've got some reaction to foods that are outside of the general sphere. So I would call your particular food intolerance strange and wondrous. That's what I would say. In other words, I have no idea why you're intolerant to those foods. And the problem is you like those. Do you like the foods that you have to stay away from?
No, I've come to like them even less, but I'm not a big chocolate eater, so it doesn't have to happen very often, which is probably why I've waited this long to say anything about it. It's easy for me to avoid those items.
Oh, sure.
Well, that's a good
I think I would avoid them because the reality is you have stumped the doc. Good luck. If you ever figure out what the final common denominator is for this, you must call us back and let me know.
I will absolutely do so. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Zorba. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for the call. And before we clock out for the week, Zorba, let's pull out this very appropriate email, another strange case of Stump the Doc from John in Liberal, Missouri. He writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, is it possible for a person to get younger? I am 70 years old, but I feel like I'm 18. A few years back, I had a severe back pain. An MRI revealed arthritis, smashed discs, knee problems, and many more medical terms that I didn't understand. The surgeon told me that the problems were irreparable and I'd spend the rest of my life in a wheelchair. Then suddenly, a few months later, the back pain was gone. Now I can walk like I did when I was 18, and my tests are even showing that my vision and hearing have noticeably improved, too. So am I getting younger? Someone has to be first, right?"
Exactly. Remember that movie that came out last year, The Strange Case of Benjamin
Button? Yeah, that was a few years
Button.
Ago.
That's exactly it. Well, that's it. Clearly. Yeah. What's his name? Is his name Benjamin Button?
No. His name is John.
Oh, John, that's right. Well, maybe John is a pseudonym for Benjamin Button. That's my only explanation.
Yeah.
But the reality is you can have a bad back on MRI, improve, and walk better.
Yeah.
That is true. But whether or not your vision would improve,
and
now
hearing,
that,
yeah.
and hearing improved and vision, you know, that I don't have an explanation for. And you know, except, like I said, The Strange Case of Benjamin Button, a real live goodness case. They said it was based on a true story, didn't they, in the movie?
No.
They did.
Think you found the fountain of youth? Send your health questions and your map along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next time, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
And you, can, of course, can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. This show was produced by Gabrielle Pedriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Colbert. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sedrin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0119Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.